Silverview appeal. Back on the record on the Silverview appeals, June 4th, 2025, 1 o'clock p.m. At this point, we are bouncing around a little bit, going back to the appellant's case in chief. Actually, I think Ms. Clutchen had just finished, well, actually, Mr. Lin had just finished cross-examination of Mr. Adams. So at this point, I think you're done, correct, Mr. Lin?
Yes, I was.
So we're moving on to Mr. Wachter's cross on behalf of the county, if he wants to do that. Mr. Wachter, do you have any questions?
Oh, yeah. Good afternoon, Mr. Examiner. I do have questions for Mr. Adams. However, I had understood he would not be joining us until
Oh,
2 p.m.
that's right. Yeah, yesterday I thought they said one, but we did say two today. Right. So we're back to actually, Dr. Cook. So, Dr. Cook and Ms. Clinton, were you done with your questioning of Dr. Cook? I was a little unclear on that. You're done. Okay, all right. So let's move on then to Mr. Schutzeney at cross-examination.
Thank you. This will be really short. I don't see Dr. Cook.
Yeah, let's see if she's back yet.
I don't see her in the Zoom right now, so I don't think she has joined back yet.
Okay, she might still be having some problems connecting. Ms. Clinton, do you know about her status at all, or?
Just messaged her to ask if she can come back on. All right, I have not received a response yet. I don't know if she's having any issues or if she's available. So can we, let's see.
Okay. And I can remember, Ms. Clungeon, did you have any other witnesses for your case in chief? Those are just the two, right?
No, just these two.
And Mr. Wachter, I think you had all your witnesses done. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. So at this point, we're back to Ms. Clungeon for rebuttal. We had Dr. Cook. Anybody else on rebuttal?
Other than Mr. Adams at 2.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to Mr. Schatz, and we'll get back to Ms. Cook when she comes over. So, Ms. Schatz, or Mr. Schatz, you had some rebuttal witnesses, from what I recall.
Yes, thank you. First will be Phil Scholes.
Okay.
Okay, moving him over now.
If Mr. Scholes is testifying, I would want Dr. Cook to also be listening and be available.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, it would make more sense that he did that after Dr. Cook's rebuttal or cross-examination, so we don't have to bring him back twice. So
And
I
she
was
says she
thinking
is
that.
on now. So
Pardon?
Dr. Cook is on now.
Okay, all right. We're getting through the mass confusion. All right, so we'll get Ms. Cook on here. Thanks, Mr. Skoll, for your patience. Okay.
Don't see her on. Maybe there's a chance she's named as iPhone.
Possibly. I think she's still having issues accessing it from her computer. So,
okay, I will go ahead and pull over iPhone and then we'll see if that's her. Just one moment.
Might not be. Now I see her in the attendees.
Yep, you are right. Okay, so let's go ahead and remove iPhone. Okay.
Oh, there she is. Okay. All right. Welcome back, Dr. Cook. At this point, Mr. Schatz has some questions for you, so I'll let him move forward.
Sorry, I thought I was done. I was outside cutting up wood.
Oh, geez.
I apologize.
Just a little bit more.
Not quite so lucky, but I only have a couple questions for you, so I won't be long with me. But For the work that was done, the wetland work that was done on remand, so you also disagree with Chris Wright in addition to Rachel Hyland and Phil Scholes. Is that accurate?
No, I don't disagree with the report that they produced. I disagree with some of the comments that he made now, because he's going against what was written in the report as to what they were tasked to do, what they actually did. And I disagree with him stating that he was nearby to, well, he stated that he was near to the SVC plots, but then I needed to reiterate that the SVC plots I established were not near my plots. So everyone understands that these three different data points that were supposed to match my SP2, SP3, and SP4 were not in the same place, and all three of us did in three different locations. I disagreed with him in the accuracy of when you dig a soil pit, you have to go 8 to 10 feet out, because that's the area of disturbance, when in fact it's kind of 2 to 3 feet. I disagreed with him stating that ecology had jurisdictional authority over the county. And there were a couple of other things, but I didn't disagree with his report. No. And I just wanted to clarify that he stated in his report, he was only tasked to look at hydric soils from the perspective of the A11 criteria. And from that, I agreed with his report.
So please try to listen to the question. I didn't ask for a catalog of disagreements. It did sound like there was quite a few there. My question was with regard to his finding that he testified to, I'll rephrase, with regard to his testimony that for 5 of the 6 data plots that he was tasked with determining whether hydric soils were met, he one testified that he looked at all parameters and determined that 5 of the 6 were not wetland. Do you disagree with that?
I agree that that's what he stated he found. You need to add the qualifier that what he did in no way compared my wetland plots to what's been done by others, because they're not in the same location. So I agree that that's what he found. Yes, I agree.
Disagree with him on the vegetation issue as well.
No, you're missing the whole point on the vegetation issue. The vegetation was there to establish that they weren't in the same location.
He testified that for this type of location, you don't check and compare vegetation because of the type of location and the time difference between, say, 2020 and 2025. You disagree with that, correct?
Yes, because it's not.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that's it.
With that statement, it's not accurate. Typically,
totally got it. Okay, are you aware that there's been 20 data plots dug on remand between Radke, Soundview, and Terra Science?
Yes, I've looked at all their locations. Yep.
Okay, are you aware that since you did your work in 2020, there's at least 8 data plots that were dug in the wetland where you found wetland?
It's also,
not running the 355.
I agree. I agree.
Okay. That's it. No other questions. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Wachter, any questions? Just muted yourself. There you go.
My apologies. Hi, Dr. Cook. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Did you hear Mr. Wright testify to his approach in locating sample sites? It was not simply being 8 to 10 feet away from SVC, but SVC's plots, but he also located his plots generally downhill or down gradient from what you had it. Essentially determined to be plots with wetland characteristics. I may have misphrased that, but did you hear his testimony in terms of his emphasis on trying to be down gradient as opposed to upland of the established wetland?
Yes, I did. I heard that.
And
Down
you...
of the SVC plots, though, not mine. Yes, I heard that.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I guess we can disagree about whether the SVP plots were representative of or close to your plots, but you have to concede that Mr. Wright's approach of where he located his plots is that's good field science in terms of attempting to replicate previous wetland soil sampling, right?
It's good science with respect to replicating the SVC data plots. Therein lies the problem. It's not in the same location as my plots, and they were tasked to go out and find adjacent to my plots and see if they found wetland. And that's not what they did. They were in a different location. And he stated that. He said he didn't do anything with respect to my points. He only went out and verified the findings of SVC. And then he was quite a distance away, 8 to 10 feet away, regardless of whether it was down gradient or not. I mean, in theory, that should be wetter. But in practice, his vegetation communities were completely different than the SVC ones. And as I explained, a wetland boundary is a line, and 8 to 10 feet away is def could easily be the difference between an upland and a wetland.
You also testified to your belief that the county is the ultimate jurisdiction with authority to accept or reject a wetland delineation. What specific statute or regulation are you citing for that proposition?
I believe it's in federal code with the Corps. It's under the Clean Water Act, Section 404B of the Clean Water Act. But I also believe it's codified in the state of Washington under the same RCW 9048 that I talked about earlier, where they talk about the hierarchy, and they're basically just confirming with the feds that the feds have ultimate jurisdiction, then the county local authority has jurisdiction, and then the Department of Ecology. That's the hierarchy. I'd have to comb through. It's been many years since I've combed through either of those regs, but that's how it's always worked.
I believe you also testified about instances in which the Army Corps was called in to conduct an evaluation of its own. Did I?
No, not on this property. They have not been asked to participate. And have there's not something called Nexus on this project because the developers is not identifying more than 1,000 square feet of fill, but there would be jurisdictional authority if someone identified that there would be more than 1,000 square feet of wetland impact or fill. The Corps could be pulled in for regulatory authority.
Well, isn't it true that you contend there is more than 1,000 yep. square feet of wetland?
Yep, but
this, on this site?
This isn't my battle. I don't live there. But certainly a neighbor could do that. Yep.
Or any of the appellants, correct?
Yes, appellants could do that too.
And to your knowledge, the appellants have not called the Army Corps to perform that service, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, those are all my questions. Thank you, Dr. Cook.
Okay, Ms. Clungeon, any redirect?
Only two, I think. So regarding, I believe, Mr. Schutz's question about the 20 additional data plots on remand, and then 8 data plots, do you recall that discussion?
Yes.
Okay. Would you agree that a number of those plots met the 3 wetland parameters?
Yes, I would agree.
Okay.
State that most of almost all of those plots are still outside. When you superimpose my wetland map on theirs, they're still outside of my wetland.
Okay. But even outside of that, would you agree that some of the additional wetland plots that are in the SVC report or Radeke have the three parameters for wetland?
I would.
The vegetation, the hydric soil, and the hydrology.
I would. Both in wetland A and down in the corner, the southwest corner.
So even based on their reports and their information, there's more wetland than they've concluded in their reports, correct? Yeah.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And you mentioned that you didn't necessarily disagree, you didn't disagree with Mr. Wright's report. Would it be more accurate to say that, would it be accurate to say that his conclusions were based on plots that were different from your plots?
Yes, I would state that's an accurate statement.
Okay. So you don't disagree with his report, but you disagree. It's not comparable to the information that was in your report or that was requested in the remand, correct?
That's correct.
And
his conclusions expanded greatly over the conclusions from his report.
Okay.
So he expanded on a lot of information in his testimony that was not in his report in ways that I disagree with.
Okay. All right. No further questions. Thank you, Dr. Cook.
Okay, Dr. Cook, I think this time you are done, although you might be called in again for a sewer rebuttal.
Yes, yeah. stick around, Dr. Cook.
Maybe later. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Schutz, now you can bring in Mr. Skold, I think. All right, Mr. Skold, I'll swear you in again since it's a different day. Just raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm, tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Yes.
Great. Okay. All right. Go ahead, Mr. Schutz.
Good afternoon, Mr. Skolls. You just heard Dr. Cook testify again, and you heard some of her testimony before. One of the main critiques that's come up has been essentially that a number of your data plots on wetlands were wrong on hydric soil. And she talked about chroma, she talked about redox, et cetera. And I believe the examiner and Dr. Cook actually looked at one of your data forms and discussed it. I want to pull a couple of those up and walk through with you to give the examiner your interpretation and understanding based on the manuals and your experience. Does that sound okay?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to share. I believe we're looking at DP14. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So I believe the testimony was, and if I get this, I'm not, this is your area, if I get this wrong, but I believe the testimony was that if you have a chroma of one with redox, then it's necessarily hydric soil. And if you have a chroma of two, oh, sorry, if it's a chroma of one with no redox, it's hydric soil. And if it's a chroma of two with any redox whatsoever, then it's hydric soil. Was that the testimony that you heard?
That is what I heard.
Okay. Is that accurate? And if not, please explain why.
It is not accurate. The statement that a chroma 1 with or without redox concentrations was an indicator in the 1987 Corps of Engineers Wetland Delineation Manual. In 2008, the Corps of Engineers issued the Western Mountains, Valleys, and Coast draft regional supplement. They finalized it in 2010, and it explicitly replaces the hydrophytic vegetation, hydric soils, and wetland hydrology sections of the 87 manual. So in other words, there's certain parts of the 87 manual that are obsolete and should not be used. And the regional supplement that was issued and finalized in 2010 relies upon field indicators of hydric soil. They have further stated that since 2010, when the National Technical Committee on Hydric Soils makes revisions to field indicators of hydric soil, that is automatically incorporated into the regional supplement. So the details of the hydric soil requirements are in the version 8.2 of field indicators of hydric soil. With this particular profile description, we have a chroma 1, that meaning the 10YR2/1, that has no redox features in the 10 inches. That layer alone does not qualify for an indicator. The second layer, that's 10 to 17 inches, is 10YR2/1 again with a token amount of redox, meaning it was just a little here or there. That's why I wrote down less than 1%. The requirement under the F6 indicator, which replaced the indicators in some of the indicators in the 87 manual, states that if it is a chroma 1 soil, it must have 2% redox concentrations and they must begin at 8 inches or less from the surface. I can bring up the field indicators of hydric soil document if you'd like, but this misses that indicator by 2 inches and does not have the redox concentrations at 2%. It misses it. So this is a clear miss on the F6 indicator.
Was the field indicator manual, was that one that was became an exhibit in this hearing, do you recall?
Yes.
Okay. If it's helpful to the examiner, maybe we could pull that up. Do you have it available where, and you could point to where in the manual this is?
Yeah. Am I available to share screen?
I believe so.
Yes, we'll find out. I sent a request.
So I don't know if we have a number for this in the record yet.
I don't, it's like 810 or something, but yeah, I don't.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I've got it down as A10.
Okay. So we're pulling up A10.
All right. So I'm getting a little notice that says you have to unshare before I can share.
Of course.
All right. So what I'm showing on my screen is page 22 of field indicators of hydric soil that is showing the F6 indicator. This is version 8.2.
How does the F6 indicator fit with, you know, as compared to the 87 manual chroma 1, no redox is hydric soil, and chroma 2 with any redox is hydric soil? How do they interact?
Yeah. So this indicator is named redox dark surface, meaning that this is a hydric soil indicator that was intended when your soil colors are dark. And that means a chroma 1 or a chroma 2 and a value of 3 or less. So this has two options as the hydric soil indicator goes. One option, it says here, the part I highlighted in blue says...
Mr. Scholes, can you make that a little bit bigger?
Yes. I just want to make sure people could see the page number.
Oh, yes. On there.
All right. Is that visible that way or more?
For me, yes. Thank you.
Okay, good. So in blue, let's just see the requirement. It starts down here. It says that this indicator can be used throughout the United States except in Alaska. It says a layer that is at least 4 inches thick and starts at a depth of 8 inches or less from the mineral surface. So that, you know, when we look at that last data sheet for DP14, we had in the upper 10 inches a 10YR2/1. So that first layer is applicable to this. It says here, if it has a matrix value of 3 or less, chroma 1 or less, and has 2% redox concentrations that are distinct or prominent. So it is not a chroma 1 with or without. It is a chroma 1 with that. Hold on for a second. I apologize. I thought somebody was trying to get my attention. Okay, so
Sorry, question?
Pardon me?
Sorry, bad joke. Go ahead.
The second part here, so that was in green. In yellow, it says it has to have, if it doesn't meet the value 3 in a chroma 1 with 2% redox concentrations, you can go with a value of 3 or less, chroma 2 or less, with 5% redox concentrations. So in our situation, for that particular data sheet, part B doesn't apply. Part A did, and we lacked the redox concentrations to meet that.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I'm straight on this. The what's been replaced in the 87 manual is that chroma 1 has to have 2% redox for it to be hydric soil.
Say that again.
Value of 3 or less with chroma 1, you have to have 2% redox to...
Okay,
to
I'm sorry. Somebody is trying to get my attention. It's sort of an urgent situation.
Sure, of course.
I sincerely apologize. They changed the security on my building, and somebody needed me to be let in the building. Okay, sorry about that.
So my question was the change from the 1987 manual from chroma 1 with no redox is hydric soil to the 8.2 field indicators manual, now it's chroma 1 needs 2% redox for there to be hydric soil?
Yes, there were some other iterations of the F6 indicator in 2006 and 2008 and so on, but this is the indicator that was in play at the time we did our work.
Okay. And so for chroma 2, you have to have, it needs to be 5% for there to be.
That is correct.
Okay. So if you stop sharing this, we'll go back to that data form real quick. And so again, if you could apply that here,
right,
be helpful.
So the requirement said you have to have a 4-inch thick or greater layer that began within 8 inches of surface. So we can see the only layer that we described here is 0 to 10 inches that we can use for this indicator. And it does have a chroma 1, but it has no redox concentrations. It needed to have 2% to qualify for that hydric soil indicator.
Okay, now let's go to another one. This was one of the ones that Dr. Cook found, said that she doesn't challenge your data, but your data actually says there's hydric soils here, even though you're saying that there's not. This was one of those locations, correct?
Right.
Okay. So I want to go to another one. So let's apply the manual that applies to this project to this one. I believe DP25, this is the same exhibit, 18 at page 104. And this was also one of the data sheets that Dr. Cook pulled up and remarked on. And I think it's the one that the examiner actually had a question on as well, and they walked through it together.
Sure. So this one you see in the first layer, 0 to 7 inches, it has a chroma 2 and has 100% matrix color and no redox concentrations. And the F6 indicator requires us with a chroma 2, which is the last number in that soil color there, has to have 5%. So the 0 to 7 inches does not qualify for the F6 indicator. When we look at the second layer, 7 to 12 inches, that it does have a chroma 2, but it had less than 1% redox concentrations, and it would have to have 5% redox concentrations. So that layer also does not qualify for that indicator. And the layers below it are too deep to qualify for an indicator.
Well, I think one of the things that Dr. Cook talked about when she had pulled this up is to say, if you see any redox, faint, you have a note here that says faint redox, you know, less than 1%. If you see any, you're really seeing about 4 or 5% because the eye can only, you know, only sees 4 or 5%. Do you have a response to that?
I would strongly disagree with that statement. I regularly see 1%, and compare that to 2%, and compare that to 5%. And when, for example, I have written on my data sheets that I had less than 1%, it means that I only saw one speck or two specks of a redox feature. But what sort of important here is that when we have hydroxyl indicators like the F6 indicator, it requires us sometimes to have 2% redox concentrations and sometimes 5%. So it was intended that a person is able to differentiate between those percentages. And we use a diagram that comes with the Munsell Soil Color book that we call a model abundance chart. And if I were just, well, I can pull this up on the screen here, but I can also just do a quick, if you can see this here.
Well, let's do this because that's blurry to me and I don't see it.
Yeah, there is something weird going on there.
I would offer this, sorry, hold on, Dr. Scholes. Yes. I would offer this time to use it as an illustrative exhibit. I believe Dr. Cook had referenced the Munsell chart multiple times in her testimony.
Yes.
And so we're pulling up a document that she referenced. And I can't remember if it was she brought it up as an illustrative exhibit, but I think that might have been the case.
Go ahead. So I'm asking
the examiner if that's okay if we use that.
Yeah, let's see it.
Thank you. I will stop sharing, and then if you could pull that up, Mr. Scholes.
Yes. Hmm.
Okay. Now, what are we looking at here?
Well, I'm not. Hold on for a second. I'm not seeing the same thing. I got to hide a window. That's why. All right. So in the soil color book, before we have the little paint chips for doing the soil color, there are a chart on a two-sided page. And what this is a model abundance chart. It allows us as users to sort of decide between this. The first page of this shows that this is 1% of this space inside this square, that it, the black specks represent 1%. That's 2%, that's 3%, that's 5%. So they're asking us on a very regular basis to compare this 2% to that 5% when using the F6 indicator. But they're
okay,
also—
let me ask you something real quick because I want to set the foundation properly for this. When you said this is called the MOTTLE, M-O-T-T-L-E, abundance chart?
Yeah, abundance.
Okay. And is this widely used in your profession?
Yes, and widely distributed in any kind of wetland delineation training.
Is this something that you teach as part of your courses on wetland soils?
I have to include this.
Okay. Sorry, and so you were pointing out that this widely used document shows how to determine 1%.
Right.
All right. Go ahead, continue.
So when I said on my data sheet that there was less than 1%, that means that I only saw maybe one or two specks, and that was less than 1%. When I say that there is, you know, 2%, I'm saying it looks similar to what we see here on the 2% and so on. So this is something from a delineator's point of view. We are constantly looking back to this chart almost every time we see redox features in the soil. We don't try to memorize these charts because you can see that it could get rather confusing right away. So it's a calibration that we are always refreshing ourselves with when we are estimating the percent redox concentrations in the soil.
Okay. And so when you have the data sheet that says, you know, less than 1%, you're saying that you're representing that you did notice that there's a speck or two. But it doesn't reach this number 1% box on the chart.
That's correct.
But in each case, obviously, it's less than 2%.
Right.
And you would have to have 2% for, say, a chroma 1 for there to be hydric soils.
That is true.
Okay, so if you could stop sharing again. And I'm not going to go through each and every one because I believe that her critique was pretty consistent across these. But I'm going to go to one more because this is one that she pointed out. So again, apply the field indicators, apply the model abundance chart to this data form, if you could, please.
Yeah. So the abundance chart, we're looking at where it says redox features and then the percent sign and below that. So we can see that in the first layer, the percent redox is zero. In the second layer, 8 to 12.5 inches, the percent redox was less than 1%. And then it was 5% starting at 12.5 inches. This does not meet the hydric soil indicator because when we get to 5% redox, it's 4.5 inches too deep in the soil to qualify for that indicator.
Okay.
There's another reason it doesn't qualify, because the matrix color is a chroma 3.
Okay, gotcha. Is there anything else you heard from Dr. Cook's testimony regarding these data sheets and her testimony that these numbers clearly show hydric soil?
Well, I'm not sure if you got a particular thing in mind, but there was a comment from Dr. Cook, citing some fairly well-known folks in the wetland research world, Mike Vopraskis, Dr. Robinhurst, about having difficulty seeing redox features less than 5%. And I believe both of those people have served on the National Technical Committee on Hydric Soils. It is that committee that decides this standard. So if those particular people are under the impression that we can't effectively see less than 5% redox, then that committee, would have to make a change to these standards. It can't be changed by the opinion of a couple of folks that feel that particular way. I would disagree and say I have no problem whatsoever seeing 1%, 2%, 5% redox concentrations. And I take classes to sites that have that little amount of redox concentrations so that those people learn to differentiate a very small amount of redox, because that's a realistic scenario that they have to deal with.
Okay. So I'm going to stop sharing. We could go through the other data forms, but it's going to be the same analysis for each of those that she pulled up, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So another thing that Dr. Cook has raised multiple times is she said you were not in the right location. So a couple things first, I guess. How many data plots were dug on remand?
We dug 3 in the southwest corner. 2 were required, I believe, under the remand. And I believe we dug 5 more. I may need a diagram in front of me for that one.
It wasn't a test. I think you did 3 in the southwest. You did 6 around, or you did 4 more around her test pits. Then you did 2 more after DP16 and Radke, and then you did 4 more around DP16. Does that sound accurate?
That sounds accurate.
Okay. And Radke themselves did another 6.
That is correct.
Okay. did you listen to Chris Wright's testimony this morning?
Yes.
Okay. Did you agree with him as to comparing vegetation in a meadow over years?
Yes. I've observed the same kind of trends season to season.
And that was something that you guys put into the SoundView report after your May visit, correct? It's to recognize that that could be problematic.
It's not that it's problematic, that we just expect that there are differences in vegetation from the springtime to the summer to the fall and from one year to the next year, especially with herbaceous species.
Right. Problematic wasn't the right term, but you were recognizing that that occurs.
Yes.
Okay. do you agree with Chris Wright regarding the importance of being, you know, within the vicinity, but not in a prior disturbed area?
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay. So as to location, because this has come up over and over again, but did you follow the remand instruction as to digging near, you know, Dr. Cook's pits, and how did you do that?
I do believe we followed those instructions. We were given a map showing where her plots had been located. And since her data sheets did not have coordinates, and because she did not have stakes in the field showing her plot locations, as been explained previously in testimony, that map was made to be georeferenced to all the other base maps that SoundView had produced. And we got a coordinate for each of those locations. We went to that location, looked around 5 to 10 feet around to see if we could match a similar kind of plant community. And if we couldn't, then we, you know, went as close to that plot as possible and dug our pit and did our vegetation analysis.
I think you testified before that that's, you know, in your experience, that's what you could have done, and it got you as close as within several feet of her mapped data plot.
Yes.
Okay. The problematic soils came up again. Unless there's problematic soils, you need all three parameters, correct?
That is correct.
And if you're missing one, then you don't have a wetland.
That is correct.
And do you know if ecology concluded that the property was not problematic under Chapter 5 of the manual?
I believe they concluded it was not problematic.
We still have this discrepancy between Dr. Cook's, you know, data plots and yours, and I think we've addressed, I think, well, her critique of your most current ones. But can you explain why Dr. Cook's data plots were recorded as hydric, but your nearby sampling showed that the vicinity lacked hydric soils?
We'd have to go to specific data plots that she had produced, I think, to be clear on this. And in some cases, her data plots concluded that it was a hydric soil. But when we sampled either near her data plots or between her data plots and where we decided was a wetland boundary, we concluded that it was a hydric soil because we didn't end up having the same soil colors and so on. But she did, on her data sheets, she made some errors in identifying the proper hydric soil indicator. And if we wanted to, we could go through some of those data plots if necessary.
Oh, I think we did that at the last hearing, actually pretty extensively. And I don't think we need to do that again. As to the incorrect soil indicators, do you have, I mean, off the top of your head, do you recall some of the issues you had with her use of soil indicators?
Well, she just simply selected the wrong indicator based on her field data. And the hydric soil, we saw two hydric soil indicators on this site, A11 and F6. And well, there might have been a plot or two that also met an indicator called F3. And so there is only three scenarios that you could meet on this particular site. And so it's hard to get more specific about it without looking at the data and explaining, you know, why in under several of her plots, she checked the wrong hydric soil indicator.
Is there anything else from your, you know, that from listening to Dr. Cook's testimony that you want to address here before I let you go? I think I appreciate your time, and I think you've done it.
Sure.
I just want to make sure.
I just want to let, you know, the hearings officer understand I was brought onto this project to assist SoundView with a level of expertise they didn't have in-house. My specialty is hydric soils. And so I knew that I was stepping into a situation where sometimes 1 inch on a soil profile description would make a difference. So I've been meticulous with my analysis from the beginning, and don't normally include things like photographs of my soil samples and so on. But we did it in this case to demonstrate that we were being very careful. We also sampled at a much higher density than we normally would to basically keep showing that outside of the wetland, we were not meeting that third parameter on a very consistent basis. So I feel we have generated the preponderance of evidence that supports our wetland boundary and shows that the areas outside that wetland boundary do not qualify as wetland because they lack meeting a hydric soil indicator.
I think that's all the questions I have on direct.
Okay, I had just a few questions, Mr. Scholes, then we'll move on to the cross. This on the issue of the remand direction, you know, your interpretation was it's limited to the A11 soil indicator. I don't fault you for that interpretation at all. You know, you had the, you know, the presence of mind to conclude, well, you can't just base it on hydric soils, you also have to include vegetation and hydrology. But as Dr. Cook testified, you also, for an accurate assessment, don't limit yourself to one hydric soil indicator. You apply whatever's most appropriate for that location. So why didn't you also, even under your interpretation, you know, as backup, you know, apply what you believe was a more appropriate soil indicator, if there was one that was more appropriate?
So for the data that we generated, we did apply, you know, either the A11 indicator, the F3, or the F6 indicator based on the data. So for our data, we are using all of them, and not restricted to A11.
Oh, good.
That wouldn't be appropriate to be restricted that way.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked. Yeah, I was hoping that was the case. Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Well, let's move on to, let's see, who should that be? I guess Mr. Wachter next. Wachter, sorry.
Thank you. Mr. Scholes, there was some discrepancy in the testimony between Dr. Cook's recounting of the distance between the Radke samples and your samples and Mr. Wright's recitation. Do you recall what Mr. Wright testified to as far as the distance in feet between your samples and his sample locations?
I believe he said that his samples relative to the ones that myself and SoundView established at the plots showing for the Sarah Cook's locations, he was down gradient and also 6 to 10 feet apart. I think his data sheet said 6 to 8 feet many a times, but I think in testimony he said 8 to 10 feet.
I thought I heard 5 to 8 feet, but
okay, I apologize. I didn't write it down.
It sounds like there was just some possible mishearing or discrepancy there. I guess in any case, do you have any concern in terms of whether, in terms of meeting industry standards, was his sampling, did it meet what is considered the standard of care in wetland delineation and wetland study for location?
This is sort of a complicated question. The delineator has a responsibility to sample in an area that they believe is undisturbed. And I respect Mr. Wright's decision to go 5 to 8 feet away because he would, as he was observing the soil or the vegetation conditions around the stake that we established for our plot, he felt he needed to be a little further away. He took sort of some caution by choosing the down gradient side. That's his prerogative. Now, had he, you know, chose to go towards the up gradient side instead of the down gradient side, that 5 or 10 feet potentially could be on a different side of the wetland boundary. So you do have to be careful that you're not arbitrarily just going any direction, but you're choosing that if you're going to be nearby, that you're on the same side of what you believe is the wetland boundary, or at the similar elevation that if you're sort of cross gradient.
Mr. Wright testified that of his six samples, one of them appeared to qualify as indicating hydric soil. Based on the explanation and the clarification that you've provided, particularly using the regional supplement from 2010, which is designed to take precedence over the core manuals that preceded it, do you agree even that's one of the six samples indicated hydric soils?
Using his data, he identified the correct hydric soil indicator. Our data was different, so therefore we had a different conclusion.
All right, just one moment, please. And just so I'm 100% clear, is the name of the document that you've been citing the Wetland Guidance for Critical Area Ordinance Updates, or is it a different different reference?
It's a different document. Let me just look at my computer screen here. The document is called Field Indicators of Hydric Soils in the United States, semicolon, a guide for identifying and delineating hydric soils, semicolon, version 8.2, 2018. Yeah.
So I believe it had there had been an offering of this exhibit as an illustrative exhibit. I actually think it should be just simply offered into the record for all purposes, because this is a foundational reference that is being relied on by the applicant and their expert witnesses. This is more than illustrative. I think of the pictures we've seen of apartment complexes, some of the Google imagery and so forth being more along the lines of illustrative. Other than that, possible shifting in what we call this exhibit, I don't have any other questions for the witness. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think that's adopted by reference. It's city or county code, basically, which I can take judicial notice of. At least that's the way I've been handling the delineation manual. 19200210A says all wetland delineation shall be done in accordance with the delineation manual and an applicable regional supplement. So I'll make it an exhibit, but I guess, with that logic, I think we'd also have to make the delineation manual itself also, unless there's a more direct interpretation. But Ms. Schlater, what's our exhibit number at this point?
We would be at, I'm sorry, would this be for the applicant or the appellant? I'm sorry.
The foundation.
Oh, foundational. Yeah. We would be at, we're at F33, so it would be F34.
Okay, so make that the delineation manual as well as the regional supplement. Does anyone have any objection over that? Like I said, I think I'd be taking judicial notice of it anyway, but it's good to be real clear about it. So let's make it that exhibit. Okay, sounds good. All right, and Mr. Rochter, was there anything else? I'm sorry, that was.
Yeah, no, sir. No other questions for the witness.
Perfect. All right. Let's, okay, Mr. Ms. Clungeon. Yeah.
No, I have no other questions.
Okay. Mr. Scholes, thank you for your testimony. It's always very helpful.
Appreciate it.
All right. So Mr. Schatz, any other witnesses? I think you had a couple. Or is it? It's 1:55. Let's see, Ms. Clungeon, is Mr. Adams in yet? I know he said about two.
No, he's not.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next witness then.
Okay. Thank you. Next witness is Rachel Highland.
Okay.
Okay, great. I'll pull her over.
All right, there she is. All right, Ms. Highland, welcome to the hearing. May I swear you in? Just raise your right hand. You swear firm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Okay, great. All right, go ahead, Mr. Schatz.
Thank you, Mrs. Highland. Ms. Highland, for the record, could you just give your education and experience to the examiner?
Yes, I have a Bachelor's of Science in Ecology and Evolutionary Biology from the University of Connecticut. And I've been doing wetland consulting for about 12 years now. I'm associate principal here at Soundview Consultants, as well as the senior managing environmental scientist. I've been completing wetland delineations in Washington State for nearly 7 years. And like I said, 12 years total, and they have varied throughout the country.
Okay. And you were involved in the remand work. Actually, you were involved in a lot of wetland work on this project. Can you just describe that briefly to give the context or your testimony for the examiner?
Sure. I was brought in and collected some data, I believe in 2020. I collected the data in the southwest corner prior to the remand. And then following the remand, we collected additional data in the southwest corner to meet those requirements. And we collected data to match Dr. Cook's sample plots. And we returned and collected additional data surrounding DP16 following Radicke's tech memo.
Okay. And I know it was important for you to testify. It came up in Dr. Cook's testimony several times that, you know, maybe some of this data was collected by you and you may be, you know, inexperienced and there might be mistakes made on that basis. You know, are you certified? And, you know, and if so, what certifications do you have?
I am a professional wetland scientist, so PWS with the Society of Wetland Scientists. And I mean, soils are certainly something that I pride myself on. I know our hydric soil indicators pretty well. And I do a lot of work on sites that have difficult soils.
Okay. And your work is accepted by the Corps of Engineers, ecology, et cetera?
Yes. You know, there's always, you know, conversations and debates back and forth. And typically we're able to look at soils together and, you know, come to conclusions on pretty much all of the projects that I work on.
Okay. And you worked with Phil Scholes on the remand as far as collecting data and analyzing, et cetera?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I had a bunch of questions to ask you about the CROMA and the manual. Redox, these are all on my list. I know you know them well, but I don't want to duplicate testimony. So did you listen to Phil Scholes' testimony with regard to the manual that should be applied and the redox, et cetera, and in comparison to Dr. Cook's testimony? And do you agree with essentially what Phil Scholes testified previously?
Yes, I definitely agree with him, especially in regards to the soils that have been discussed at length regarding CROMA 1 not needing redox and CROMA 2 only needing redox to be present. That is an old, outdated indicator that has been replaced.
Okay. And I think you said, I'm just going to share my screen real quick. I think you might have mentioned that the Corps of
You're
Engineers.
sharing a Word document. Is that what you wanted to share?
Nope, it's not. Let's see. Pull it over. For the first time, it actually shows up on the exact page I wanted it to, and now I can't bring it over.
Yeah, now it's showing your entire screen.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just pulling up one of the ones that Dr. Cook said was showed wetland, sorry, hydric soil. And as we talked about with Mr. Scholes, you know, that's not the case based on the current manual and the model. What was it called? The model abundance chart?
Yes.
Okay. You also mentioned to me that the Army Corps has a tool that can be used to when you collect data, and based on, you know, the current manual, it can tell you whether it is hydric soil or not.
Yes, the Army Corps has a tool that is an automated data sheet for it. It's essentially the same document that you're looking at right here, but it is an automated data sheet that they created so that you can input this data and it checks boxes for you for the things, the criteria that it's meeting. There are some, you know, caveats to that because some of these indicators are complicated, and some things can't be like seen in a profile, like hydrogen sulfide is a smell. There's no way to depict that with a color. So it'll check boxes and say like a question mark where it's the type of thing that you have to enter it yourself. But if, you know, if it's something as simple as redox dark surface, which requires a certain color chroma for your matrix color and a certain amount of redox, and which also goes into the depth and thickness requirements, it will check the box for that as well. It's a tool that they produced for their internal purposes for their own people to utilize, but it's also available to the public, and consultants use it, regulatory agencies use it. It's a good tool to double check if you're ever confused about something or just need to, you know, double check that you're not missing something.
Okay, and so we've heard testimony that the that, you know, a chroma a faint redox note and a chroma of less than one with sorry, a chroma of one with no redox would be hydric soil. If you use the Army Corps' own data forms where they check, is that what would come out?
No.
And what would it produce?
It would not check any boxes for that.
For hydric soil.
Right.
Okay. So the Army Corps of Engineers, the manual, all of it is consistent with a chroma of one needs 2% redox, and a chroma of two needs 5% redox.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I don't want to belabor this too much, but I do think it's important because it, as we go on, it seems that location just keeps coming up. So you've heard the testimony from Dr. Cook that you were in the wrong location, even though it was based on her map. Somehow you were way off, even though you were using her map. So I just, you know, if you could walk through, because I know it was SoundView, I believe, right, that actually did the geolocating of that, or georeferencing, I think the term was used. Could you just walk through what that process is and explain why it was actually, you know, that process results in essentially the same location as if she had given you the GPS data?
Yeah, so we have GIS specialists in-house. That's their entire job here, is to produce maps, produce mapping tools, things along those lines. And so what they can do is when we are provided with a map such as this that has certain benchmarks, certain things that do not change, like the site boundary or certain buildings, things like that, they can use those as anchor points and drop the aerial image into GIS, anchor the PDF aerial image in this case to those points so that it is essentially overlaying directly over our site. And then they just go through and drop points that have coordinates associated with them at whatever points are shown on the map. So that's what we did in order to make sure that we were going to the same locations that were provided to us in the map. And those locations, you know, those coordinates of those locations should be pretty dang similar to whatever coordinates Dr. Cook could have provided us with.
Okay. And I think Mr. Scholes had testified that he had high confidence that you guys were within, you know, several feet. There's always a margin of error, right, to some degree?
Yes. So all the GPS units or GNSS units that are utilized in this field have some margin of error. I know the word submeter gets thrown around a lot. That is like a rating for the GNSS or GPS device. And that's typically like a best case scenario. It's not uncommon for a submeter GPS, or we'll just call it geolocation device, to have an accuracy reading in any given moment of more than a meter, because what that device is doing is connecting to satellites above. So if you have anything like cloud cover, canopy cover, it can interfere and result in lower accuracy. So like I said, just because it says submeter, it doesn't mean that every single point has an accuracy of 1 meter or less. And so anytime you're collecting a point, you always have some margin of error based on what accuracy the device is telling you that you have. So it'll show you kind of in a bubble. And as the accuracy increases to be more accurate, your bubble or margin of error gets smaller. And as your accuracy decreases, that bubble gets bigger. And pretty much what that means is while your point is showing up in the center, in reality, you could be in any of the location within that bubble.
Okay. So is it accurate to say you guys were using best available science, best available tools to locate as close as possible the points on the map that she provided to start as a starting point requirement to dig alongside her test pits?
Yes, we definitely did our best to ensure that we were accessing the same locations that were shown on the map. When we got out there, the first thing I did was go out and put stakes at the locations that were showing up on the like map as her points. And we quickly realized that the vegetation in those locations did not match hers exactly. And so we did kind of a perimeter sweep of probably about 10 feet to look around and see if that vegetation was present nearby. Because like I said, there is a margin of error. I don't expect, you know, even if we had the exact points down to like 10 decimals, the ability to locate that in the field simply because of margin of error as well would have been very, very difficult, if not impossible, without a physical representation of her point in the field.
A stake or a flag or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And you looked around, and again, this is testimony I think we have in the record, so I'm not going to belabor it, but when you didn't find, you know, the was it canary grass or the whatever the dominant one, she said it wasn't dominant, sorry, but that it did exist in that location. First, I guess, did you listen to Mr. Wright's testimony this morning?
I did.
And you've been out to the site how many times?
Oh, I mean, probably a half dozen, okay. If not more.
Okay. And would you agree with his conclusion that is at least when he went out, so that would be 2024, that's not a predominant species in this location?
Not at any of the locations that we sampled.
Okay. Do you agree that with I think Mr. Scholes had said it, you know, once you look around for 10 feet, you know, or so, it doesn't make sense to tromp off in random directions trying to find the vegetation that matches exactly.
Yeah, I would agree that unless you have some very unique novel plant community that occurs in a very teeny tiny area as your data plot, that trying to find a group of species that are relatively common on the site is not going to be any more accurate. You know, Dr. Cook has said several times that this is a matter of inches. And if we had tried to just, you know, find her location based solely on vegetation, when there is a large area of vegetation that, you know, is very similar to what she recorded in her data forms, then there's really no way to know if we were right on top of her point in that location either. So we determined that the best that we could do was sample the locations that were mapped, and at least, you know, document what we were finding at those mapped locations, rather than try to guesstimate at where she sampled and then have a point on the map showing that we were far away from her, where she mapped her sample point, because then, you know, we would be in this situation, just arguing over the fact that we didn't sample exactly where it was mapped. So it was kind of an issue no matter what, it seems like.
Thank you. I think that's all I have on direct.
Okay, great. All right, Mr. Lechter, any questions?
Ms. Highland, Neil Lechter on behalf of the county. Over the course of your half dozen or so visits to the subject property, were you present during the visits by Department of Ecology personnel?
I was not.
Were you present or during those visits, were there any other state agency personnel who were present?
The only personnel that have been present during a site visit that I've participated in have been representatives from the county and the third party review.
And does that mean Mr. Heacock and Mr. Wright?
Mr. Heacock and Colton Coster?
That's Costers, yes, that's right. Okay. Those are all my questions. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Clungeon.
Yes, just a few. So regarding the location, you indicated, you know, there's always kind of a margin of error, right? And would you agree with Dr. Cook's testimony that when it comes to wetland delineations, even a couple of inches can make the difference between a wetland or an upland location?
Not normally, unless you have something that has a very distinct, usually it's a distinct grade, like a steep slope that leads down into a depression, then sure, inches make the wetland boundary. But in any given delineation, there is a certain amount of subjectivity, and where one person is more conservative, another person might be more aggressive, and you can end up with a wetland boundary that ranges some, you know, within an arm span or something like that. And usually there's some level of, we could move it this way, we could move it that way. And on occasion, we do get comments from, you know, regulatory agencies or reviewers saying, we want you to move the flag 5 feet. But inches is, you know, that is, I think, oversimplifying things.
Okay. But maybe say within a few feet. Within a few feet can be the difference between upland or wetland when it comes to wetland delineations.
It could.
Okay. If there was kind of uncertainty regarding the points, say you looked around and looked for the vegetation and then decided to go to, you know, using the map, right? Would one of the ways to kind of minimize the dispute be to locate some additional points that are farther toward the wetland?
That is something that potentially could be done. I will say that we have overlaid our points with her map of a wetland, and nearly all of our points are within the area that she has mapped as a wetland. I will say that one of her sample plots, SP3, I believe, which is our DP16, in her own map was excluded from her wetland shape when you zoom in. So that's something that shows up outside of her wetland boundary, but it's because her own point was outside the wetland boundary. And we do have quite a few plots located within that wetland boundary that show that it is not meeting hydric soil criteria.
Okay, but that the points within that the wetland boundary, those are more focused on the DP, right? Those are kind of in the north, it would be the northwest area of the wetland.
We have, let me just look at my map here. So DP16 was, you know, supposed to represent SP3. We collected additional data in all four directions surrounding that that point. So that includes further into the area that she identified as wetland. We also have data plots that we collected within the area that we identified as wetland, one of which DP19 does meet all three wetland criteria. And then we have three additional data plots to the south of that, DP20, 21, and 22, which do not meet wetland criteria. They fail to meet hydric soil indicators. And DP20, one of the ones that fails to meet a hydric soil indicator, is located within the area that we have delineated as wetland, just to kind of further illustrate that, you know, this is an area that we've delineated as wetland. We continue to, you know, kind of disagree on the, you know, the original wetland delineation, and that area did not meet for soils, but we included it as part of the wetland.
Great. DP22?
DP20 was the one that I was just talking about.
Okay. But DP22 was?
DP22 and DP21 are located outside of SVC's delineated wetland boundary, but they are located within Dr. Cook's wetland boundary.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm looking at the right maps here. So this, I'm just pulling up, this is exhibit F18 at PDF 42. Okay, are you able to see my screen?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Just gonna try and zoom in a little bit here. Okay, so this DP22, that is within the wetland, according to this map, right? That's where my cursor is, kind of right in the middle of that wetland, is that red with the DP22 indicator?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the one that you're saying is not in the wetland?
That one was outside of our wetland boundary. I do not know what's going on with this map. Hold on one second. Give me one second. I'm not certain about that. Let me look at the map we produced before that. So that's the map that we came up with that extension of the wetland to the northwest to try and incorporate the area that Radicke had identified A11 at. Mm-hmm. Let me see if the one we produced prior to that shows the same thing. I'm wondering if they accidentally dragged the polygon by accident.
Okay. All right, but so
sorry, go ahead.
So kind of following up, so say you go out to Cook Scientific, this SP4. If you're instructed, that was one of the A11 indicators, and so you guys were just supposed to go out. And if there was uncertainty about whether you were upland or toward the wetland, wouldn't it make sense to, just out in an abundance of caution, maybe take a point farther to, in this case, it would be to the west, somewhere between that point and DP-19.
So we have a very large number of data plots in a very small area here. I think that the data plots we already have collected are doing a very good job of illustrating the lack of hydric soils on the site. We tried to produce data that was repeatable and had some like tether to the original map that and mapping that we were provided with. So we could have taken a whole load more data to prove our point, but the client has spent a lot of time and a lot of money trying to prove this, and every time we take a data point, it's not some sloppy 5-minute process. It's something we take a lot of time to properly record, to follow all the proper procedures, to ensure that we are documenting everything correctly, taking photos. So to continue to take additional data is costly. And I did pull up our map that we produced prior to adding that little wetland extension to the northwest. I do think that during that process, they accidentally shifted the polygon because I have a map we produced in June showing that DP-22 is just outside of the wetland boundary and DP-20 is located inside.
Okay, so kind of got a couple different versions here. All right. Would you agree with Dr. Cook's characterization that sometimes these meadow wetlands can be more difficult to delineate than some of the other types?
I think in some ways, yes. There are certainly a fair number of wet, like forested wetlands where it's much more clear. So yes, they can be more challenging. I don't always think that's the case, but in general, what I think is most challenging about a site like this is the fact that it's a lot of vegetation that is not very helpful. It's the majority of it is facultative, meaning it grows in wetlands and outside of wetlands. Whereas if you have a plant community that's mostly fac wet or obligate, that's obviously going to make it much easier to identify a boundary.
I see. Okay. Right. Let me just. Regarding the vegetation, when you went out, you said you looked for kind of similar vegetation and couldn't find it, and then kind of went based on the map, right? Are you surprised the difference in vegetation between what you found near the map points and what was in Dr. Cook's data sheets?
Yes.
Okay. And if you weren't going on a map, would based on that different vegetation, would you conclude or would that lead you to presume that maybe they were different locations?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Hyland. No further questions.
All right. Well, why don't we take our break now till 2:40 for the cross-examination? See you then.